Okay, and I've got Michael on this line.
Yep.
Awesome. So let me just officially welcome everyone to today's Conversations with the Masters call with my guest, Michael Port. My name, for those of you that don't know me, is Mary Allen, and I'm a Master Certified Coach, author of The Power of Inner Choice, and, of course, your host for this Conversations with the Master series. And I just want to welcome our live listeners here today and also to those of you that may be listening to this as a recording, really thanking you for taking your time out to be here and give this gift to yourself. And before I introduce our master today, I want to just take a moment and invite everybody here on the call to take a couple deep breaths and get really present for our call today. So let's even just do this together, just a deep breath in and a nice exhale, and one more nice inhale, and another one of those beautiful exhales. And I just want to say, you know, I know how much I get from calls when I am 100% focused on taking in the wisdom, and I resist those temptations to multitask. So I really want to invite you to give your full presence and attention here, really being open to new possibilities that may emerge for you, knowing that in the next 60 minutes there may be an idea, a shift, something that occurs inside of you that could really truly alter your life for the better forever. So with that, I want to just share a little bit about our master today, Michael Port. The Boston Globe calls Michael an uncommonly honest author. The Wall Street Journal calls him a marketing guru. Canada's leading newspaper, the Financial Post, declares the world needs more Michael Ports. I think I would agree. Michael is the author of 3 best-selling books, actually now 4. The first 3 were Book Yourself Solid, Beyond Book Solid, The Contrarian Effect, which is subtitled Why It Pays Big to Take Typical Sales Advice and Do the Opposite. By the way, that was selected as the number 9 best business book for 2008 by the editorial board at Amazon.com, and it was the best sales book for 2008 by 800 CEO Read. Today we're going to be talking less about sales and a little bit more about Michael's latest book, The Think Big Manifesto. Think you can't change your life and the world? Think again. And its purpose is really to rally us to think bigger about who we are and what we offer the world. You may have recognized Michael from TV appearances on networks like CNBC or MSNBC. He's been in numerous newspapers and magazines. He didn't actually start out, though, as an author. He actually began as an actor, and I hear he has been in starring and supporting roles in some of the TV and film films, including Sex and the City, which is one of my favorites. I'm going to have to find out which episodes. He was in Third Watch, All My Children, Pelican Brief, The Believer, a whole lot of slew of other things. Michael runs one of the largest and most respected coaching programs for small business owners in the world at michaelport.com. And his newest website, which we're going to be learning more about today, thinkbigrevolution.com. This is an online social network inspiring leaders worldwide to start their own personal revolutions. And Michael blends his yoga teachings with his martial arts and holds the rank of a black belt, so he brings a lot of diversity and skills to everything he teaches. And since Michael's mission is really to rally big thinkers, why don't we jump in and get started? So, Michael, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. So for those that don't already have a copy of the Think Big Manifesto in their hands, which I'm hoping by the time everyone leaves this call today that they will be inspired to go get one in their hot little hands, What is this Think Big Manifesto all about?
Oh, boy, the Think Big Manifesto is a call to action. It's a call to action for us to come together to start a movement of big thinkers. Because I do believe that we all want to improve the conditions of our personal life, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we want to do more than just that. I think we are hungry to belong. I think we want to be part of something bigger so that we are actually making history and changing the world for the better as we move this movement forward. So the manifesto is the handbook to what I would consider the Think Big revolution.
So what inspired you to write this?
Oh, boy. Well, you know, I've wanted to write this for a long time. It didn't take me long to write it, but it took me a long time to publish it. You know, I had a lot of small thoughts going through my head. I didn't want to write another self-help book. I think there's a lot of great self-help books, but I didn't want to be, I didn't want to show up as a wannabe self-help, anti-intellectual, pseudo-spiritual guru.
Mm-hmm.
That was my fear. I did not want to do that. I definitely never wanted to be a guru in the way that, you know, America has sort of placed this all-knowingness on some folks just because, you know, they're willing to stand in front of others. I didn't want that. And I didn't want to write something that was anti-intellectual, which I think is one of the dangers that we sometimes run into when we are, you know, looking at how do we improve our lives.
And including everybody, which is also what you're doing, because oftentimes when we include everyone, we want to, like, throw out intellectualism in the process.
Exactly. And then also, the, you know, pseudo-spiritualism, this idea that, you know, my own personal idea of what that means. But so that's not so important for everybody here. But I think what's important is that it took me a long time to do it because I was afraid. I had a lot of small thoughts about how it would affect my identity in the world. And I think that, I posted this on my Facebook page today, I think it's hard to make history, to change the future, unless we're willing to completely strip away our identity. And so the Think Big Manifesto, interestingly enough, I think doing big things is not necessarily about adding more, because I think you can do more with less than you think. And I think that you have more than you think already. And so sometimes it's a question of stripping away these fat layers of persona that we have wrapped ourselves in.
Mm-hmm.
And exposing our core. Now, whatever that is for each one of us, our core, what we stand for, how we want to show up in the world in a way that is not contrived or manipulated or an idea of what we should be, but is truthfully an example of our full self-expression.
Right.
You know, so it's interesting. It's a little, my version of thinking big is, I think, is different than the Donald Trump way of thinking big.
You know what? And I think this is such an important distinction because I think a lot of people would naturally think, oh, it's about thinking big. You would think your identity does come from taking this huge big stand in the world. And what you're suggesting is it's as we really step into big thinking, we're actually dropping that.
Yeah, ideally we're transcending
our
ego. Yeah, we're transcending our ego and our sense of what we're supposed to be. Because I think that in our culture we have attributed being known for being big.
Yeah.
We've conflated those two things, and I don't think that they're necessarily the same. Each one of us should define what big thinking means to us. Big thinking may be leaving this, you know, treadmill that you've been on, this desire, you know, for attention or fame or whatever it is, and, you know, moving to Japan and studying martial arts. I don't know. Maybe that's sort of in a little thing in the back of my head. I don't know, but or Brazil in my case. But again, actually living a simpler life may be a bigger life for you. Somebody else may want to build a $100 million business. So each one of us needs to truly identify what it means to think big, and I think that's going to change, you know, as we mature, because, you know, we at one point in our life we may think that money is the most important thing. At another point in our life we may think that, chasing girls is the most important thing. Right? I remember there was a day where I thought that was.
I think that's very important.
Yeah. And then when you become an adult, you realize that that there are other things that might be more important in terms of how you look at the world. So I think that it is natural to change. But I think that one of the things that we run into a lot, I love that you are the way that you framed this whole interview series that you do around the idea of mastery.
Yeah.
And I think that mastery is a concept that does not get enough attention in our educational system. And I think that the idea of mastery is often very far removed from most of us. So you say, well, okay, that the number one most successful baseball player in the whole world, well, that person is a master at what they do. Or, the person who, Deepak Chopra has written 79,000 books. Well, he's mastered what he does, right? And if it's something that you arrive at.
Right. But it's not. It's dynamic. It's evolving, and it's
right.
It's kind of this pushing the edges and realizing your own potential.
Yeah. So I think it's an interesting. It's a very, very important topic of conversation. And if you look at most of my work, it's all framed around that concept. The book Beyond Booked Solid was all about the pursuit of mastery. Book Yourself Solid is all about the pursuit of mastery. The Think Big Manifesto is all about the pursuit of mastery. And I think the pursuit is a very important word.
Mm.
Because as you move towards actualized mastery of a particular subject matter or area of expertise or skill, what you often realize, or at least what I've come to find, is that I know a lot less than I think. And so, in the Think Big Manifesto, I talk about the three most dangerous words that you can put in a phrase together. And there are only three little words, but when you put them in together in a phrase, they're very dangerous. And the three words are I. The first word is I. The second word is no. And the third word is that.
Mm.
My four-year-old son, he says, I know that all the time. I said, Jake, you want to take karate? No, I already know that. Oh, really? Okay. Or he asks me a question and I give him an answer. He goes, oh, I know that.
Mm.
And it's the first time he's ever heard it. He's 4 years old. That's okay. But when you're 40 years old, walking around day in and day out saying, I know that, is not mastery. And
right.
anybody that I have learned from that I believe has achieved a level of mastery in their particular area of expertise, field, what have you, they tend to take the approach, I don't know, but I am willing to learn.
Right.
And even if it's an area where it'll blow your mind, they seem to know so much. They still say, I don't really know, but I'm willing to learn. And in the Think Big Manifesto, I talk at length about that. And the concept that great leaders, people who have pursued mastery, are very comfortable holding contradictory ideas in their head at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas somebody who is less willing to reflect on the world as it exists from many points of view, or somebody who is newer to a particular, area of study, will often say, well, this is how it is, or that's how it is. No, that's the way it is. No, it has to be this way. Yeah, the more time you spend in the world, the more you realize that there are so many different ways to look at almost any area that you're addressing. And so that's why philosophy is so interesting to people like us, and debate is so interesting, and learning is so interesting. So I think the pursuit of mastery is the key, and the idea that big thinkers continue continue to find that they don't know, and they're willing to learn.
Right. I think that's so key. So on this path to mastery, so we know we want to be sure that we're really open to learning and not stepping into those dangerous words of, I know that. Any other keys that you might have for people that are on that path of mastery? And
sure. First of all, we need a set of practices, not just principles, and not just methodologies. I think that's very, very important. Oftentimes, when you look at personal development, business development, books or concepts, they're usually based in methodology. And methodology is important for getting things done, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good idea for us to study many different methodologies. However, I'm more interested in ontology, finding new ways of being.
Yes.
Because if you can find new ways of being, then you will take different actions based on the appropriate methodologies, and you'll get different results.
Right.
And so typically, when one gets a particular result, they're told, and they don't like it, they're told to change their actions. Right?
Right, but what they really need to be doing is looking at how can they shift their being.
Right, and it usually comes from how you see the world.
Mm-hmm.
So you see the world in a particular way, so you take a particular action based on that viewpoint, so you get a particular result based on the action you took, which was based on a particular way that you saw the world. So if you just change the action, you don't change the way you see the world, then you're probably going to get similar results because the action will not change appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to go back to the way that you see the world. And this is a very, very interesting area to keep studying in ourselves. You know, how do we see the world, and how does the way we see the world affect our way of being? So, for example, a very, very common, you know, buzz concept in personal development is get out of your comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, I've heard that before.
What?
I've heard that one before.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense, get out of your comfort zone, but, you know, I'm not always sure exactly what my comfort zone is, and like, you know, I don't have a metric for it, you know, it's like, where do I push, what exactly is it, you know. But the reason that comes up so much, I think, is because in our culture, we are overly conditioned to pursue comfort. Mm-hmm. You know, earlier today, I was a little cold,
mm-hmm.
yeah, and so I told my assistant, can you just turn the air conditioning up like 2 degrees? And then literally an hour later, I was a little warm. I'm like, hey, Julie, can you turn the air conditioning a little colder, about 2 degrees? And this is a problem, because if we treat our life as, with this thermostat of comfort, we're always trying to get to this, you know, get to this comfortable place, then we don't, our way of being is not supported. So the way we see the world that we're always supposed to be comfortable influences the actions we take, so we keep trying to make things more comfortable. And then, of course, the results we get are very mediocre or moderate because we're so comfortable. And so getting out of our comfort zone is a good idea, but I would look at it a little bit differently. I would look at it from the perspective of be willing to be comfortable with discomfort.
Yes.
Because if you can continue to do that, then you can continue to get out of this, what people refer to as your comfort zone. Because I see it this way. It's like, oh, you're a little uncomfortable with doing this new thing. So, okay, you know what? I know I'm uncomfortable. I'm a little nervous. I've never done it before. Yeah, what are people going to say? They're going to tell me I'm stupid or I suck. By the way, that happens to me every day.
Mm-hmm.
Every day someone tells me I'm stupid or I suck. And I could prove
it. No, they don't.
Of course they do.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. When you have hundreds of thousands of people out in the world reading your stuff, you're going to have people telling you suck, that every problem in their life is because of you.
Right.
When you take a public position, a public stance, that is going to happen. So that can be very uncomfortable. And, you know, I don't know if a lot of people are willing to put themselves in that kind of discomfort. Even though, you know, the majority of what they're getting is really positive, we tend to hear negativity louder than we do positivity.
And that's so true. So what do you do to get more comfortable, especially, I would call that definitely discomfort if people are...
Yeah. Well, that's certainly uncomfortable. And then there's a million different kinds. I mean, you know, let's say you want to give a speech, and you never really gave a speech to more than 10 people. So someone says, can you give a speech to 50 people? And you're like, oh, my God, that's crazy. But I really believe in what I have to offer, and I want to stand in the service of others as I stand in the service of whatever my destiny is. And so you have something that you stand for, and you want to be in service to others. That may trump the amount of discomfort that you feel. So you say, you know, I believe that I want to stand in this in a bigger way, you know, and this discomfort I feel should not overwhelm what I stand for. Okay, you know what? It doesn't. It's just 50 people. I believe in this more. Okay, well, you know what? You may be willing to go ahead and speak to those 50 people because what you stand for is big enough. But if it was 5,000 people, you may say, I'm just not doing it because you haven't built up what you stand for in a big enough way to really propel you or compel you to go ahead and speak in front of those 5,000 people. So I say, fine, you speak in front of the 50 people, you're slightly uncomfortable, but you're saying I'm willing to be comfortable with the fact that I'm uncomfortable. But then you do it and you go, hey, I did it. I was uncomfortable, but I did not die.
Right, right.
I didn't die. I'm actually still alive. Holy shit.
Well, and I love one of your quotes, and that is that the truth is that big thinking is always, 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 always worth the expenditure of energy.
That's right.
You know, and this, you know, thinking big is the getting outside of your comfort zone and going past the discomfort.
Well, small thoughts really do fear the future, and big thoughts are the future. So if you want to create a future as an interpretive person in the world, you're going to interpret the world around you and then create a future based on your interpretations. You got to keep making sure that the way you're interpreting the world allows you to create a bigger and bigger and bigger life for yourself. But that time you spoke to 50 people, you say, I did it. Now I'm comfortable with that level. Now you get an offer to do 100 people. Oh, God, you're uncomfortable again.
Mm.
But now I'm willing. And so you keep increasing your capacity for doing big things because you increase your capacity for discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, I got to tell you, I mean, that's a bigger deal than I think most of us will realize or are willing to talk about. Because even just being more successful in your business, you want your business to be as successful as, not you, but one. Just say, if you're newer to the world of coaching and you want your business to be as successful as my business, you want to be as well known as I've, you know, been able to become in the last number of years. Well, there's a lot of responsibility that comes along with that.
And
more people to be responsible to.
Right.
You've got to deliver on your promises fully all the time.
Yes, yes. And I like how you're pointing out here that also we don't have to do, like, the hugest thing outside your comfort zone tomorrow, but it's like you take the next natural step, and
right.
It might just be, you know, whether it's 6 feet outside your comfort zone or 3 inches outside your comfort
right.
zone.
And in the Think Big Manifesto, I have a code of conduct, which I believe all big thinkers follow.
Mm-hmm.
And it is not a secret, nor is it a blueprint to fix you, because there's nothing wrong with you. You're fully whole. You're born into the world whole, you know, as opposed to some of these religious ideas where you're born into the world broken. And, you know, you need to be fixed, and some, you know, something that, you know, something, some person with a robe is going to fix you, right? Well, I believe you're whole, fully.
And I believe that too.
Okay, good. So you're whole, and, you know, take the spirituality, the religious component out of it for a second, and just say that you're whole. Now, I got a little sidetracked there. I forgot what I was responding to. I was responding to something you said. What was it?
You're going through your code of conduct, and there's nothing to fix.
Oh, yeah, it's code of conduct. Mm-hmm. So, again, it's not a secret or a blueprint, and I say specifically there is no first right step, and there is no last step. There isn't a 1-2-3 blueprint-like process. It just doesn't work that way. And any significant, you know, sociologist or psychologist or, you know, ontologist, anybody that's an ologist of any sort, will tell you, you know, the world doesn't really work that way. If you actually intellectually study the way the brain works, or the way that people behave socially, emotionally, etc. So I move away from that idea, and I base this code of conduct for big thinkers on the Fibonacci sequence. And the Fibonacci sequence is a series of numbers that are found in nature and in art and in all different aspects of life, that is an organic series of numbers. And I describe how it works in the book. But to demonstrate that, you know, there is no right first step and no last step, but when you follow an organic path, an organic way of being that supports big thinking, so you create the circumstances that will allow you to do big things in the world. For example, you know what you stand for, and you let it guide you in everything you do. As we talked about before, you allow yourself to be comfortable with discomfort. You live in integrity. Now, that seems like a simple concept. Sure, oh, don't we all do that? But I don't think so. All of us, from time to time, sell out.
Right.
Sell ourselves short. Our principles get flexible for whatever reason from time to time.
And so important to come back to a sense of integrity.
A sense of integrity. And, you know, it's interesting. That's one of the, and I'll give you some more of these, you know, pieces of the code a little later on. But one of the things that I think is so interesting to me, I haven't really wrapped my brain around it yet. But why is the big deal, for me as a business owner and as a writer, why is it such a big deal that I'm authentic? Like, why is that such a big deal? You know, people say, well, what's so unique about Michael Port? Well, he helps you think bigger. Yeah, but what is it about him? Everyone goes, well, he's so much integrity. And I'm only saying this because I don't get it. I don't get why that's a big deal, because that should be so normal. And there's nothing I do that is so unusual. I just tell the truth. But in the process of writing this book, of course, I was doing a lot of research, and I came across a quote from George Orwell. And he said, in a time of universal deceit, telling the truth can be a revolutionary act. And I said, oh, my God, now I see why. Because I am not sure that people in our industry tell the truth consistently. And so, you know, whether you're talking about the personal development or the business development or the, you know, the sort of world of online entrepreneurship or whatever it is, I'm not so sure that the truth is what leads the way. And so when you can, you know, when you can base your unique selling proposition on integrity, then we need a revolution of truth. So integrity is so incredibly important. And how do you show up in the world radically transparent?
Wow. So what do you think the impact is of authenticity and integrity? I mean, that goes beyond.
The impact is so far-reaching, not only for how you feel about yourself. I mean, look, you know, my whole first book, Book Yourself Solid, was based on this fact that if you feel that you're in full integrity and fully authentic with respect to the way that you are marketing yourself, you're going to want to do a lot more of it because it feels right and real and in service of others. One of the reasons we don't go out and do enough marketing is because we often feel that for some reason it's not right, or we don't want to push, or whatever it is, and it's because most of what we see makes us uncomfortable. And so that's just how it can affect you personally, but how it can affect other people will, you never even know the far-reaching implications of what simply telling the truth can do. And you'll start to see when you start getting emails and phone calls from people whose lives you have changed dramatically simply because you're willing to show up in the world in the biggest way possible. So, for example, you know, we talked about standing for something. We talked a little bit about overthrowing, you know, the judges inside your head and outside. We didn't go too deep into it, but we talked a little bit about that and the fact that we often feel like a fraud.
Right.
I'd love to get back to that in a minute, actually.
Yeah.
But one of the other things that is so incredibly important for this code of big thinking and this code of conduct is collaboration. Collaboration. Trust everyone, almost.
I love that line in your book.
Yeah, because I think we should take our cue from our great judicial rule of the presumption of innocence.
Yeah.
I think we should operate under the presumption of trust. And if someone breaks our trust, fine. But I can't tell you how many business owners I come across or new business owners, and I say, oh, why don't you work with so-and-so? Why don't you collaborate? Oh, no. I can't trust anyone.
Well, really? And what's the cost of not collaborating, of not trusting?
Well, I mean, look, you know, there are people who've been financially successful not trusting and not collaborating, but I think that if you look at there's a whole bunch of I'm getting a little tongue-tied because there's so many things I want to talk about in this area, but number one, I mean, we are having some major, you know, troubles in our economy, and we have some major trust issues right now. And that, I mean, the banks will not lend to each other right now, which is one of the reasons the economy is not moving. Because they don't trust the other banks to be solvent.
Right.
Even if the bank says, yes, we have capital on hand, blah, 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 the other banks don't trust each other.
Right.
Because of, you know, of what's been going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we are so competitive in our mindset, we naturally are going to trust less. Competition in a game is beautiful. And there are very clear rules set up, and so you can trust the other team, to play by the rules, and you've got referees. It's a simple concept, and you're playing a game. But when you're out in this sort of amorphous world that is business, there aren't a lot of referees, and the rules are not always clear. And so when you get into this competitive mindset, as somebody who does not want to dominate others, who does not, you know, want to win at all costs, then you may actually not go out and do the big things you want to do because you don't want to hurt other people because you think everything has to be competitive. Well, if I get successful, what about my friend who also wants to do it? She's doing the same thing as me, and if I do it, then I'm going to destroy her chances of doing it. Well, I don't want to do that, so I'm not going to go do it either.
Small thinking.
Or the opposite, you may think, I'm just never going to win at this. You know, I mean, there's so many other people so much more aggressive than me, and they're just so, you know, hungry and so on and so forth, and, you know, and I'm just not going to win. And look, there may be people who are more aggressive than you. There are people who are way more aggressive than me, you know, and they sell way more books than me and make way more money than I do. But they have determined that that is more important to them, and so that's fine.
But I'm just seeing here that when we don't trust, and we're so focused on the competition, it consumes so much valuable energy that could be invested towards, you know, your highest expression in the world.
That's right.
And thinking big, so.
That's right. And look, you know, there's another level of interaction which people often engage in, which is fine, and it's cooperative interactions. So you want to do big things in the world, cooperate with others. That's great, and that's what we learned as kids, cooperate with each other. Okay, fine. You know, use your words, cooperate. That's good, but that's very quid pro quo. You do this, I'll do this. You do this for me, I'll do this for you, but not more than you did for me.
Mm.
So oftentimes, if that's the highest level of interaction with other people that we get to, we're going to continue to play small because really big things, real change, seismic change, requires synchronicity. It requires an energy that is hard to pin down, hard to really describe or understand. But synchronicity is what occurs when you're operating at that level.
Right.
You know, there's a great book called Synchronicity by Jaworski. Is his first name? Jan Jaworski? I forget his first name. But it's a great, great book on this idea of synchronicity. And it's very hard to really... It's hard to make it happen, but when you are collaborating, that's the higher level of interaction, truly collaborating, where, yes, you both win, but you don't care who wins more.
Right.
Yeah, because, you know, typically it's like, let's make a win-win, which means we have to win the same amount, you know?
Right.
But how about let's make a win-win, and who cares who wins more?
Right.
You will do for others without asking for anything in return because you're working at a very synchronistic, high-level collaboration where the others do the same for you, but not in a transactional way. That's a very high level of collaboration, and we need to learn how to do that.
You know, and I, as you're describing this, it actually reminds me of one of my husband's businesses, which is a company called Skytran, and there is so much collaboration. I mean, it could be your thesis statement on this, where whether it's politicians stepping forward or government agencies, volunteers coming out of the works to just bring their expertise to the table, and there is such a trust in this space and collaboration that this project has evolved. And I know there's some people on the line that know about Skytran. Others will be learning. It's definitely a think big concept.
Very, very cool. So yeah, I mean, there's a great example of it. And then let me get down to something really basic yet very big. The idea, and this is another piece of the code, the idea of making commitments and fulfilling them.
Oh, I love this. And this kind of points back to, we pointed to, you know, what's the most essential ingredient in building trust in any relationship? And this is exactly...
That's right. I mean, you know, people often talk about, how do you trust? I'm just going to trust somebody just like that? Well, no, what trust is built over time. I think you assume trust at the beginning so that you start a relationship in a very positive way, because if you're already if you're lying to each other to start, you're screwed, right? Or if you are totally, you know, sort of shucking and jiving, making sure you're like, I'm not going to position myself here, I'm going to cover myself here, you know, because you don't trust what they're going to do, the relationship's going to be in trouble as well. So you start with assuming trust, but then you build trust over time by making commitments and fulfilling them, because that's how trust is earned. Now, trust is going to be broken from time to time. That's a natural part of life. Breakdown occurs. When you're working on a project, you know, somebody's going to miss a deadline, breakdown will occur, whatever's going to happen will happen, but there will be some kind of breakdown. The way you build the trust back up is a reconnection to the commitments and fulfillment thereof, critical conversations around it, potentially difficult conversations, but you're now, because you're really following this big thinking, you know, way of being, this set of practices, not just principles, the set of practices, you have the kind of conversations that may make you uncomfortable, but you are now comfortable with that discomfort. And you get back to this commitment making and fulfilling. These are habits, these are practices that we need to develop, because they will allow us to do big things in the world. And on top of that, another piece of this code is submitting to authority to be an authority.
Mm.
And it's very closely related to promising and fulfilling. It's very closely related to getting comfortable with discomfort. It's very closely related to collaborating. It's very closely related to overthrowing, you know, the judge. It's very closely related to standing for something. See, all of these ways of being, these practices that you can let guide you, are all interconnected. That's what you don't start with one and then finish with the other. They're all interconnected. And the word submit I used specifically because that freaks people out.
Right, right. Say more about the statement of submission.
Statement of submission.
It's like that's not one that most people are like, oh yeah, let's sign me up for a statement of submission.
Yeah, right, exactly. Now, it depends, you know, if it's like an underground dungeon, maybe that's a whole other concept. People are like, oh, that sounds fun. But generally, the idea of submission is just totally foreign to us. But let's go back to the pursuit of mastery.
Okay.
Your whole interview series is about conversations with masters.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you want to pursue mastery, it's a very good idea to submit to the authority of a mentor.
Mm-hmm.
That is not a guru. There is a difference. A mentor is a person who has done or is doing what you want to do. And they have life experience. They have educational experience. They have experiential experience.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to walk a path that is similar. Not the same, not necessarily even equal, but similar. And so this is very different than giving over your life savings to someone invest in their secret program that has a blueprint to fix you.
Mm.
It's a very different concept. And if you look at masters, people who are in pursuit of mastery, they have, for the most part, submitted to a power or a process that made them uncomfortable. Even from time to time, they didn't want to do what was asked of them, but they knew in service of the big vision that they have, the goals that they have, it was the kind of learning that was required. So, for example, you know, you can blame my martial arts past for this if you want, and present. But in martial arts, when you choose a teacher, you choose a teacher and then they say. You don't choose a teacher and then go, yeah, I'm going to learn this from you, but not this. And I don't really like that technique, so I'm just going to skip it.
Mm.
This doesn't work that way. You fully learn. You fully learn in a way that is as like your teacher as possible until you have developed a certain proficiency. And then you start exploring. And then you start to find your own way of being within that structure. And you may even create a whole new structure, new way of being out of that. But if you want to pursue mastery, you have to know what came before. You have to dive deep into the history. You have to, you know, I remember I was at a conference years ago. It was a coaching conference for a large coaching organization. And someone was talking about EST. And one of the women who was very high up in this coaching organization, who was sort of supposed to be a leader in this coaching organization, said, "What's EST?" You know, now, this was really like the beginnings of the modern coaching movement.
Right. I know EST very
so,
well.
You know, she didn't even know what it was. Now, I'm not saying you have to be, you know, some sort of history expert. I'm much more interested in the future than I am in the past. But submitting to an authority that is righteous, that you believe in, that is moving in the direction that you want to move, without giving up your individualism, without buying into unnecessary, destructive groupthink, is a very big way of considering yourself in relation to the world. It is a very mature way of pursuing mastery. Oftentimes, especially in this business, people go out half-baked.
Mm.
Well, I just need to learn like this two, three things, and then I'm just going to go and say, I am now this, and I'm going to create an identity around it. But they have not yet actually pursued mastery. And so here's what's interesting. I'm going to say one last thing about this because this is my soapbox. Mm-hmm. I got into this debate online a year and a half or so ago with a woman who is very, very well known in the information marketing business because she said that marketing is more important than mastery.
Mm.
Her feeling was, and you've heard this before, is like you're the best in the world at what you do, but just nobody knows it.
Mm.
Well, if you were the best in the world at what you do, everybody would know it.
I'm so glad you bring this up because this is definitely one of my views about the whole marketing world. It's like everyone's skipping the step of how we develop becoming the master and becoming the category expert and authority.
Absolutely. And so I think we skip the practice of learning. I think we, you know, if I meet, you know, a new business owner and I ask them, you know, have they read these five books, and they're probably the most well-known, most important books on doing what they want to do in their business, and they say no, I know that they have not yet considered pursuit of mastery as it relates to the business side of their business. Or if I say, have you read these, you know, four books on, you know, this coaching philosophy that you are, you know, saying you do? No, I haven't read them. Oh, really? So, yes, it is. Look, I write books on marketing, so learning how to market yourself is very important. But if you can do that in conjunction with a set of practices for learning again and again and again and going deeper into your area of expertise, then it's not just easy, like, you know, oh, just, you know, one, two, three, easy, but it is much easier.
Yeah, easier and more fluid.
So this
really ties together what we were saying at the beginning of the call about kind of giving, not slipping into the, you know, I know that, so opening yourself up to learning. But I really want to underline this piece about that it's not just about working with a mentor and duplicating them, it's like through that process, finding your own way of being that's the most authentic to you, but that is the most authentic you at the highest possible potential of that. And unfortunately, as human beings, just the way that we get born into this world, we need to develop that we're not like a lot of animals that are born and, you know, pretty much, you know, 6 months, a year, they're fully developed the way our brains are because they are so complex. It's like we need to get input from the outside world in order to be our best and to be most fully developed.
I just started writing. I was just asked a couple weeks ago to write a monthly column for Entrepreneur Magazine on sales. And so I'm writing the second article. The first, I've finished the one for August. Now I'm writing the one for September. And so the one for September, I'm writing about the two greatest sales books ever written. And one is Emotional Intelligence by Daniel Goleman, and the other is Social Intelligence by Daniel Goleman.
Mm.
And everyone goes, huh, what? Those are sociology books. I said, of course. You know, this is what somebody who wants to sell needs to study, and not just study a little bit, but read those books over and over and over and over again. Read every book on sociology, psychology, emotional intelligence, social intelligence, et cetera, that you can, and you'll learn how to, you know, sell more. And so, you know, it's the repetitive action on a particular topic or subject that allows you to build mastery. It's not, you know, it's not the size of the, you know, the breadth of your knowledge, you know, in the early days. It's the repetitive actions that you take. So I have a four-year-old son, and he is, he wants to read the same book 100 times. He wants to watch the same TV show over and over and over. And he's fascinated every time. He sees something new, something totally different.
Mm.
And so I try to do this with him when he's, you know, when I'm reading his books. Last night we were reading the book, you know, What Do People Do All Day? And, you know, I'm like half asleep, dozing off, and he just wants more and more and more. And I try, but it's harder for adults to do that.
Mm. We can learn a lot from 4-year-olds.
Yeah, we can really learn from them. And there's actually a big article in the New York Times just about this, you know, reading, you know, the important books again and again and again, and developing a way of seeing information and knowledge new each time. That's one very important way to pursue mastery.
Oh, I love that. That's such a valuable key. So I want to kind of circle back to, you know, we're talking about really having people take a personal stand in the world and establishing themselves as a category expert or authority. How can somebody discover what they want their stand to be? Any tips for that?
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things, again, I look, you know, maybe I don't make as much money as some people because I always will preface, you know, these kind of answers with, look, I don't know exactly how to do it.
Mm.
Right? Because, oh, forget it. I'm not listening to this guy. He tells me I don't know exactly how to do it. Because there isn't like, okay, well, here's the three things you do, and then you've just discovered exactly what you stand for.
Right.
It's a fluid thing. It's evolving. It's something you reflect upon and consider. But one of the things that I think is really important is that as you are considering, look, we all stand for lots of different things, right? You know, more democratic access to education, for civil rights, for, you know, freedom for all people, to more laughter, more joy, happiness, more sex. I don't know. We all want to stand for, you know, for lots of different things. But maybe there's one big thing that you'd love to build your work around, your body of work, or build your, you know, community involvement around, or really be the theme that guides the way that you develop your family. Maybe there is something that can take the lead. And so I think it's a good idea to explore the different things that you believe strongly in and allow those, you know, to influence you. And one of the ways that you can determine what one thing you want to build your world around is by talking about the things you stand for and standing up for the things you think you stand for and seeing what resonates the most with you, what fuels you the most, what can you talk about until you are blue in the face and then keep talking about. What's the thing that people say, oh, that is so you. I always love, I feel that way when I'm around you.
Right.
Yeah.
And I like to point to the aliveness factor. I know when I'm talking about a subject that is so close to my sense of purpose, my biggest thing in the world, there's a different level of aliveness and energy that comes through me that I practically want to, like, bounce off the walls. So it's like looking for that aliveness. And so you can do that by trying, you know, getting out, being in conversation. And then, of course, then you have to make peace with any kind of fear of taking the most passionate, vulnerable place of interest and beginning to kind of share that with the world.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. Hey, can you hear me okay? My earpiece just got kind of funky.
I think we're good.
Okay, good. Good. And just so you know, I have another interview at the top of the hour, so I just have to get off 1 or 2 minutes before that to call into the next one.
Okay, perfect, perfect. Well, maybe this is, how about even just maybe one more? So once somebody has their stand in the world, maybe what would be the first step to just move forward in establishing themselves as a category expert?
Well, look, you know, another piece of this code of conduct for big thinkers is that it is stop waiting for Godot, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a play by Samuel Beckett. It's on Broadway right now with Bill Irwin and someone else. And it's been around for 50 years, and we always call it, as Americans, waiting for Godot.
Uh-huh.
But technically Samuel Beckett says it's waiting for Godot. So just so for those of you who are familiar with it, it's waiting for Godot.
And that's spelled G-O-D.
O-T.
O-T.
And there is the word God in there, right?
Yeah.
So the idea, the basis of this play is that these two, it was written for men, but whoever, it doesn't matter, men or women, two men or women sitting in the middle of the desert or wherever you can put them in the middle of the, you know, farm, country, doesn't matter. And they have this dialogue for about 2 hours, and they don't go anywhere because they're waiting for Godot. And they can't do anything until Godot shows up. When Godot shows up, he's going to tell them what to do. So it's an existential examination of God, and also, you know, taking action. And so stop waiting for somebody else, you know, to tell you what to do. The only thing you are waiting on, the only person you are waiting on, is you. And so big thinking must happen now. That's why I say it's revolutionary. It happens today, tomorrow, and forevermore. Now is the only time that you have. I mean, the future is uncertain. The only destination we all share is death. And we are all in some kind of race against death. So urgency is a big question to me. How much urgency do you have around the things that you want to create in the world, experience in the world, produce in the world, effect in the world? So that urgency piece is a very, very big piece of the equation. And the people that I've experienced who have done extraordinary things in the world, and again, these extraordinary things range, you know, all from all different, you know, areas, they have this sense of urgency around it.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to them that it happens.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's revolution time. And, you know, that's why this is a manifesto, a call to action for a revolution. And thinkbigrevolution.com is a totally free online a networking environment. I call it the online base of operations for the revolution.
Mm-hmm.
So you go there. You start your own revolution. You have your own My Revolution page. You put up your manifesto posts and your videos and your pictures, and you start discussions. There are thousands of other revolutionaries in there who want to come and join your revolution. They've set up revolutions that you can join. You can talk to them about how to get things done. You can get support from them when you need it. You've got to do this with other people.
And a great opportunity, it sounds like, to collaborate with people as well.
Exactly.
And have fun. And so people can go to thinkbigrevolution.com.
Yep.
And, of course, we want to recommend to everybody to pick up a copy of the Think Big Manifesto. Any other special offers? Because I know that you do so many things. I think everyone needs to be carousing your website because you have so many phenomenal programs, because you really are somebody who's not just talked about doing things, but, I mean, you've written 4 books, and you lead group coaching programs, and, I mean, there's so much people can learn from you.
I definitely agree with that, for sure. But I don't ever like to make any kind of monetary, you know, offers, like, you know, come do this program or come do that thing in these kind of environments, because I don't know who's listening, and I haven't yet had the opportunity to earn their trust, and trust, you know, is built over time. So what I would say is that go to the places where there's no investment, where it's free. So michaelport.com, you can go download a chapter of Book Yourself Solid, Beyond Book Solid, The Contrarian Effect. Go to thinkbigrevolution.com, join there. Go to bookedsolidnetwork.com. It's another free social network that I've created that has a few thousand people in it, you know, so that you can create referral relationships and networking relationships around your business. But michaelport.com is the portal, no pun intended, for all of these environments that I've created for these different coaching programs that I've created and learning programs and anyhow, that's where you'd find, you know,
a fantastic playground. And I'll be sending out a follow-up email to everybody to first get access to this call and also to access some of these phenomenal environments. I so appreciate having you here today. And just any final words to those people that are out there kind of thinking, gosh, I'm about ready to, maybe they're willing after this call to go and think bigger,
I would say you've got to do the work yourself, whether it's personal work, professional work, but don't do it alone. And that I love you very much, and not in a weird way, I promise. But I do. I love you for being, you know, an up-and-coming, potential, you know, burgeoning big thinker ready to take on the world.
Love that. Well, and I love you too, and not in a weird way. And I so appreciate you being here. And I think we covered so many of the core elements of the Think Big Revolution, and hopefully have inspired people to really pursue a path of mastery. So thank you, Michael.
You're welcome. I'll come back anytime. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. We'll do it again.
Okay, bye.
All right. Bye now.